Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Edwards. And alongside me today, folks, we have Michael Bellavia, the CEO of Help Good. Michael, thanks for coming on the program today.
Thank you. And that is the way to pronounce it. Bellavia.
Do you want to? Bellavia. Italian roots?
Or Italian roots. Yeah. 100% Italian roots, yeah. Well, a few other things from according to 23andMe, but.
Oh, okay. So nothing too official. There's not a lot of cred in the Italian community for you, other than the last name.
That's it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you're just like everyone else and all of us. So, we'll let it slide. Hey, Michael, I appreciate you just taking the time. You know, it's always great to be with another impact-oriented CEO. Help Good being a certified B Corp obviously has to go through a rigorous assessment to achieve that. It indicates to me you want to measure, you want to focus on not just making money, but also making an impact in this world. Before we talk about Help Good, I'm just curious, Michael, what inspired this organization?
So honestly, in a way, it was a little bit of chance. Which I think you always need to be open to. I was in a very different organization prior to this. We were making animation and games for kids. And there literally was just like something that came on the radio about an organization that was doing work with children, Starlight Children's Foundation, Starlight Starbright Children's Foundation. And I was like, that should be an organization that we work with. I called them and they said, yes. And we need somebody, particularly to make games and animation for us. It was just like kismet. And worked on one project for them. And then that kind of spiraled into a whole world of impact work that I just generally found more rewarding than, even though animation and games are fun. I mean, in LA, this is a hotbed of entertainment. But it just seemed like, okay, this is really fun in a very different way. And then it expanded into projects that didn't involve animation and games and just generally helping these organizations advance the common good. And so it's like, you know what? Rather than shilling dog food, which I have a dog, there's nothing wrong with dog food, I'd rather shill for the betterment of society and all of us in some manner. So just really kind of left that other world behind and then went full force with this, partnered up with somebody else that used to be a client in New York, and then co-partnered with her, and now we run this agency. Hopefully,
I love it. And at the end of the day, that's I think the essence and purpose of capitalism. It is to promote the common good. It's really to solve problems and fulfill the needs of society. Question for you though: you started this organization. Is this your first time being a founder?
First time being a founder, I was. In a very early stage company before this. So that one was in existence for 15 years, that animation and game development one, but I didn't found that one. I technically founded a single person consultancy, but I guess anybody can call themselves a consultant any day of the week. So this was the first one that was just like, okay, really gonna go out there fully on my own. But consulting, it was more transitional state thing.
And for the audience listening to this, how long have we been at Help Good now?
So like the early project started about a decade ago, but under this LLC, partnering with my co-partner, all that started back in 2016. So what is that now? 8 years ago, almost? Crazy to think about, but.
And I just want you to think about like some of the earliest memories, right? That kind of come along with, starting your own business, your own brand, working with co-founders. What like early memory kind of comes to mind that might help someone understand a little bit more about your journey or HelpGood? Is there something that kind of comes to mind, an early memory you could share with us?
Some loneliness and craziness at the same time. Just because you see, look, I had gone to business school already, and like when this was even happening, it was already like maybe a decade past business school time. And so I had seen cohorts doing big things, like a lot of entrepreneurs come out of business school. I don't know, this felt like I was already an older person, I'd say, like in my early 40s, mid 40s, and some of that verb and energy that might be there for a young founder wasn't necessarily there for me. So it just felt weird to be doing this at a stage where a lot of people are already finding their stride and that they already know who they are and what they're doing. They know what their life's work is going to be, and it could be working at some organization that they made or whatever it is. But it just felt like, okay, I'm doing something that not a lot of people do at this age. And then I think you have to be crazy to even start a business, because most of them fail. So it takes just some belief in yourself, and you have to be a little crazy to believe in what your own capabilities are, put yourself out there. And even with a partner, it still is you having to decide, can I do this each day? Not necessarily always knowing where like a next kind of client is going to come in, and is that going to cover your month's rent, or what is this going to do? So it really is just a lot of belief in yourself. So it's that loneliness, but it really is your own internal engine that is going to drive you. And so I believed in myself to make it work and to stick with it. So
it says a lot. I mean, clearly, you know, so that's a big risk that you're taking there, a big chance really on yourself. Certainly a lot of confidence comes along with that. In your experience so far, like what have been some of the, I guess just like for people listening to this, right? Like key takeaways that have helped lead toward your growth. It's really difficult to have growth, especially in the early stages. Now you're at a different point in your career. So just out of curiosity, looking back, what have been some of the key drivers of this growth so far?
So I think a lot of that, it's a mix of things. One is like the marathon, being there and being able to like kind of go with it no matter what and keep at it. And like that intestinal fortitude, that ability to stick with it once you're doing something. Like we've had one client that we've been working with for 12 years. That's the Ad Council. And we've worked with them on the Smokey Bear campaign. That's literally our, and even more than 12 years now. That's like the client that we've had for the longest run. And we've seen that through all different kind of iterations of things from the very beginning, like where I was sitting across the table from that client and saying, yes, we can do this in the early days of social media, and saying, yes, we can help run Smokey's social media presence. To now that person who was sitting across from me is now an employee at our organization working with us directly. So it's just, I think some of that is just being able to kind of stick it out and go with it. Then I think another big thing has been something that not a lot of people would advocate for. Big swings, like really, like I don't play baseball. I don't use a lot of sports euphemisms because I was never picked for any team growing up.
Right, right.
My son is, he's got all of this energy, but I have none of it. I was much more nerdy. If Wordle was a thing back then, I knew who Will Shorts was before Will Shorts was a household name for doing stuff by the New York Times crossword puzzle. Anyway, big swings, like going after things, just saying like that story that like, you know what? I heard something on the radio, I'm going to call. Like I have no connection to this. I just think we should do it. Like going after clients that I think made a lot of sense to work with. Going up against like big RFPs, which nobody wants to work on an RFP, but like even at our agency, we go after these government client RFPs, and it takes a huge amount of work to do it, big lift. And if you don't have a relationship, you're running fully uphill sometimes. But those big swings have really put us in kind of a different league at times in terms of the size of the projects that we've worked on, the types of issues we've been able to tackle, the employees that we've been able to hire, and the economic opportunity we've been able to provide them. They don't always work, but when they work, they work. And they really can just put you in a different stratosphere. So I do believe in the marathon bit, like evergreen growth, you know, I'm just going to chug away and do this thing. But if you're just doing that, I don't think you can survive just on that alone. I think you just need to kind of get scared every once in a while and just say, I'm going to go for this. Another thing I tell my son really is just like how to, and he's the one that gave me that advice really, is sometimes you have to get a little scared to do something. Like, especially at his age, he's almost nine. These are new concepts. You don't know. You're just being force-fed them and believe this. This is the way it is. And I don't know it. But I feel like a lot of that is also just like, this is new terrain. I got to go for it and see where it takes me.
It's a wise young man. Yeah. No, swing for the fences. I absolutely love that. You know, here's an actual, I think this is an interesting topic we could talk about is, I know, like, again, we have a community of CEOs that we host, like, in what's called a forum. They meet in groups of 8 to 10 on a monthly basis in a confidential setting to get help with whatever's keeping them up at night. And an issue that often arises is kind of this like juggling effect for certified B Corps. Because it's really hard, right, to get certified. And of course, you want to make those impact. Like be.
Yeah, for us, it was like a year and a half during COVID. This was my COVID baby, really. I worked on this personally. And that was a mix of intestinal fortitude and also just swinging big things. We could do this. So took a lot of work getting that.
So my question is this balancing act, right? Because you are like, you have big projects, right? If you get the project, you have to probably hire some contractors. You probably have some full-time employees, of course, that you're giving, you know, good benefits and good wages to. What have been some, like, maybe some difficult roadblocks you've run into to try to balance this good employer plus also reality with economics and what I can actually afford and pay you based on the project that we have? Like, have you ran into any issues like this?
So I think it had, but you know, it's interesting because I don't think they were issues when I was experiencing them. Now, if I look back on them, I think we're at a different place because I think we're a little bigger. And so I think some of the challenges, I think some of that is naivete and you just go into it and you just do it and you don't even think about it as a challenge. So it's like, I got to do this thing. I want to grow beyond myself. I'm just going to just go in charge of the light brigade. You're just moving forward. Doesn't matter. And that, looking back on it, you're like saying, oh, that's a little crazy. You just kind of charged forward. But I think partly we did take some working with people on a freelance basis before we felt comfortable to hire them. Or even sometimes working, I think that made us work with, let's say, younger people that were a little less, or that were a little more risk tolerant, because it was just a few of us in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So being a little scrappier, looking at people that could be kind of Swiss Army knives, that could do a bunch of things at once, so that we didn't have to hire pure specialists at the time. And then it also meant clients that were willing to work with an agency that was a little scrappier. But it helped that we were also focused in this, at the time, was new, like digital realm of things, like social media was still in its infancy. And now there are social media experts, much like there are probably people saying, I'm an AI expert. Well, AI, really, the underpinnings of that are a little over a year old now or stuff like that, maybe, if you've been doing it for a while. So I think partly it was a matter of just taking incremental risks along the way based on the amount of work that we had and knowing that no matter what, we would always do right by them if things, or at least try to do right by them as much as we could along the way. So making a commitment, not just to servicing our clients, but servicing our staff, servicing the partners that we work with. That's really a part of the B Corp thing, is not just doing things that are for your bottom line, but also taking into account things that are going to kind of advance your local community and kind of advance the common good. So
when it comes, you definitely have a kind of this charge forward kind of mindset, an optimistic mindset, if I will, if I can add. But thinking about some of the decisions, you know, that you've had to make in the past few years, like, is there one that comes to mind that was the most difficult decision?
Hmm. You know, I don't like, maybe not the last few, but I think even just doing this,
sure.
Going back to what I had mentioned before, like the, like this LLC started back at the end of 2016 or so. And that time frame of 2015 to 2016 was a very difficult time for me personally. I was like trying to extract myself out of last company with a whole other set of partners. I had a relationship that was dissolving, a 15-year-old one that was like dissolving. I was trying to think about starting this new business and not making as much money. And I was also in the process of starting a new family because I had wanted to become a dad. And I was a late stage dad. I was 45 at the time, 54 now. And so there's just a lot of life all being thrown at me in that one time frame. And I could have just gotten a job, really, and that would have been a safe and easy path. But I was just like, I want to start this business. It will really be difficult for me mentally if I don't do this, if I don't forge my own path forward. So I think that was just a huge thing of saying, yes, I can do this and I can make it work. Knowing that there were so many other things that were going on personally and professionally that were just like saying, no, go stay path. I think that was a huge thing to believe in yourself ultimately. I don't know. That's a huge thing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Some people will call that crazy, right? Like,
well, that's right. That loneliness and craziness. I feel like other entrepreneurs understand it. It's difficult to find a life partner who is not an entrepreneur who understands that, because it is a good deal of volatility, and human beings crave security and comfort, and a life partner is supposed to bring you that. And you need to have a partner that enjoys a roller coaster ride, because entrepreneurship is one. Being a leader is a roller coaster ride. Somebody going along for that—that's not an easy. That's not an easy shotgun to kind of be in somebody's world of things. So I have to also thank both exes and present partner for being along for those rides. So.
And can you like lean into that a little bit more? I know like you might not think, hey, this is what we talk about in the podcast, but I think it's like really important, like entrepreneurs, like understand what you're talking about, because again, like with Forum, one of the reasons why it's so valuable is, you know, they can't tell their spouse, you know, what's going on in their business. Sometimes they've outdone it already. They've been for 20 plus years. They've talked their ear off about the business. It's all they do every single day. Tell me about maybe what's working in this new, obviously not new anymore, but relationship that has just been comforting or has just been made a very nice homeostasis, a nice kind of equilibrium here.
So I do think that my current partner had been also met new partner at the start of this business. So like, again, that 2015, 16 time was like a year of total change. And age difference also younger, significantly younger than me. And I think some of that energy and just outlook of go, go, go has kept me kind of going also. And I'm not saying, hey, everybody, go get yourself a race car partner. But I found one and definitely helped because I'm gay. He was coming on board at a time where, again, all that change was happening. And I met him 2 weeks after kid was born in a very modern family situation. And so he was not an entrepreneur. He was unemployed at the time that I met him. But he was definitely along for an adventure, definitely along for a ride. Definitely along for a degree of chaos that a lot of people aren't open to that, even if they're not entrepreneurs. And so that was very helpful to have somebody that wasn't always coming from a place of concern. And that's something, and I don't think my ex had that, but we were older at the time. And so we had been together 15 years and we had a stable relationship and we had stability in our lives. And here I was going along saying, hey, I want a new kid. I want a new business. I want to change everything up. Who the hell wants to deal with that?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is really somebody having that receptivity to dealing with unknowns and charting through chaotic waters. I don't think you have to be going into the Bermuda Triangle all the time, but it helps having somebody that is up for the adventure, curious.
Yeah, alongside with you. Yeah, and everyone likes different things, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, but no, I appreciate you just being open and sharing that. Because it I think there's a lot of people listening right now just going like, yeah, like that mm-hmm. that's probably it, or maybe that's what I need to find, right? So
and some of them might be saying, I don't want anywhere near that.
Like, yeah, I don't want to be in a Bermuda Triangle. Right. I don't want to get lost.
Right. And so I get why people work a job. Because yeah, you have to deal with a boss and you have to deal with coworkers, and it's maybe its own version of Game of Thrones politicking. But there's a definite stability you can get there that a lot of times you don't have any knowns in that entrepreneurship path. So
I get it. And very similar to, you know, the people you hire, the people you bring on the team, you know, it's a lot of it is about relationships and can you trust them? And do you fully get to know somebody, you know, in the first couple of weeks versus opposed to years, maybe? Like when it comes to your hiring process and your culture, what are some questions maybe in that interview process that you absolutely want to make sure that you know from somebody before you either sign a contract with them?
You know, we often ask how they dealt with adversity or difficult situations or a time where they were wrong, like where they might have led a client. And we're dealing with, we're an agency, we're helping our clients with marketing communications problems. We're supposed to be helping them through their own chaos and charting a course. So oftentimes we're making a, like trying to craft a problem statement or create a hypothesis. And we're setting out a strategy of how to kind of test that. Then we execute the test. Then we're capturing the results of that test to see, was our hypothesis right? Should we shift that? So it's like this loop process that we're going through, almost like scientists in a way. But it's helpful with that process that you're not always going to make the right hypothesis and you're not always going to get the results that you want, or you may not execute your experiment the proper way. So we usually like to ask people how they dealt with a difficult situation, or you've been asked it during this thing, or just like how they've worked with something when they had to explain to a client that they didn't necessarily take the right step along the way, or there was a mistake made, and how they reacted to it and pivoted or maybe didn't. Like maybe it was like it resulted in a negative experience, but what did they get out of that negative experience then? So usually after somewhere in there, because we are often dealing with having to help clients where there is not one resolute single decision that could address their specific issue. And so you have to be able to be prepared to defend it, explore it, pivot away, iterate on something. And so I'm looking for somebody that is ultimately open and curious, which are a couple of our values, that somebody that can kind of deal with that energy.
But out of curiosity, when were the values created? How do you use them in the business?
I think we had some of them between myself and co-founder that we not articulated explicitly, but then it was only like, I think we had a set of them in an early draft of a handbook that I just made in the wrong way that you're supposed, it's not supposed to be like me by Fiat, the CEO says this. So, but then about maybe 2 years ago, we started exploring this whole EOS approach of things, the entrepreneurial operating system, I think it is. And so part of that is to create a VTO. And I don't ascribe to a lot of this like acronym world of things. Like it reminds me of business school. It's a triggering bit. I just don't, it's a lot of times make me like want to bother.
I gotcha. No, I'm there.
But I don't know, this resonated with us, even in a world of us doing all this kind of social good vibey work.
Rocks.
Right. We still saw that, you know, this makes sense. You're running a business. Ultimately, you got to do these things, even if you are trying to do good. We did it through that way of like kind of working through getting to some of these values. And it was a helpful exercise. And we've stuck by them And I'm constantly referring to them and like bringing them up in conversation. It's stuff that we discussed in interviews with people just to make sure that like that's not scary to them, because it is going to be something like you can tell if somebody's a curious sort or if they're really not going to be. Like in our business, being kind of strategic consultants to folks, you have to be very curious about things like origin stories. You have to want to find out like the root source and root cause of a problem and like what they tried, what they didn't. Like it's all about that. So yeah, definitely it was helpful to go through that exercise and we continue to revisit them just to see, are these still the values that we want to carry forward and how do they get expressed and do they change? And does one value kind of take more of a emphasis at different stages of our own growth and everything? So
I appreciate sharing that. We use Traction as well, EOS as well. Mm-hmm. And the only like knock I have on it, I just be curious to learn about your experience, is just like it really does for like I in my experience squanders innovation because mm-hmm. you are so focused on like this rock is my priority. And you know, and again, we still use it. I still speak very highly of it. It's really brought a lot of mm-hmm. I guess alignment across all of our departments in terms of what they're measuring, how it pertains to the company goals and whatnot. But it does for I think kind of kill some innovation. What's have you experienced that at all? And to just a singular focus?
I think I experienced that to an extent because in that format I'm visionary, really. Yeah. So I do love like. I may have a case of shiny object syndrome to an extent of like, hey, I want to try this and we should look at this and explore that. I find this interesting. And a lot of times I think I can't go down that path because of some of the structures that we have in place based on an EOS kind of approach to things.
Sure.
So we're not fully in the soup of EOS, I would say. I think we've gotten to the point of VTO and we have some loose rock, but we don't run like that regimented of a ship. I think I think we want to amp up our own pursuit of this, but I do think that that is something to keep an eye out for. And we talk about it. We even just talked about it in one of our what do they call it? So we don't run all the meetings like to EOS standard. Like I think there's like a oh god, it's not the one-on-one, but there's another one. I can't remember what the acronym to it is. But somebody did bring up innovation. How do we make sure that we're prioritizing it? And I was just very open to. Like innovation can happen on very big grand scales, but it can also happen in just small little actions that we take that challenge the way that we used to do something. But yeah, I think it can be, if you ascribe too closely to any framework or anything like that, you can get too lost in it, really. So
sure. Sure. That makes a lot of sense. And thinking about just in the spirit of rocks, what are like those 3 to 4 things that are on your calendar that you, excuse me, are like actively pursuing on a daily basis? Maybe another way to ask this question, Michael, is just like, what is the best use of your time as CEO in the golden hours of your day? What activities are those?
I'm still very much in a hunt mode. I'm always hunting for who's the best next client for us to work with, who's somebody that we should be helping, who we haven't been helping, like really just that endless pursuit of the hunt. Then it's like the internal hunt. Who are the people, like, do we have the right people in the right seats? That's an EOS thing. Do we have the right people on our team? How do we do right by them? And then how do we make more opportunities for others to do right by other people in our bigger community? So I am like really growth focused in that regard, like and also looking at ways that we can grow other than just like adding another log on the fire, because a lot of agents, like for an agency, a lot of times with the agency growth, it is just add another body to the team, get another client, add another team staff member. So it's all about like how to more fuel. But I am totally looking at what are the things that we can do differently that just isn't just that pure by the hour consultant mode. We haven't fully gotten there yet, but that is just something that yeah, when an AI thing kind of goes out into the universe, am I intrigued to investigate or at least kind of have thought experiments around it? For sure. Of like how that could change how we approach things, what we do, how we serve clients. how we can better serve ourselves and the community that we're in. So I'd say all that expansive growth stuff.
You're certainly growth minded and impact oriented as well. And I'm curious for you, we haven't talked about it too much, but when it comes to impact, like how do you view impact? Do you view it as an accelerator of growth? Do you view it as something that is concessionary? Do you view it as something that's just natural, becomes really innately, inherently into the company? When you think about the term impact, what does that mean to you?
Well, I do look at it through the bias lens of that the ultimate of advancing the common good. I look at it through our bias lens of an agent of like what the core mission of our agency is. But I think impact could be like measured on a micro scale of just like, hey, we sold a ton of money. They're like, we made a ton of money this quarter. And like, we're going gangbusters. Year over year growth. Blah, blah, blah. Like, and that, it depends on what your motivational factors are. And I like money. I went to Columbia Business School. I could have gone down a path of finance and like heavy duty consulting and like, but I think for me, that impact is also kind of like, not just that legacy you leave behind, but the what you're creating in that moment, how you are incrementally shifting the world that we live in to make it safer, to make it healthier, to make it a place that my children or my child, your children, your child would want to be proud of. And you're not always doing that because we're human and humans are the most flawed creatures on this planet. But I think it is that belief of, or at least the pursuit of doing something bigger than making that sale the next quarter or shareholder value. Because I do think that shareholder value isn't just measured in dollars, and it shouldn't be. So that's why we definitely decided to become a B Corp, because that's not the ultimate factor for us. So.
Love it. I'm curious. Yeah, you're leaving things far better than you found it. You know, especially when it comes to, you know, your kids or anything else, right? You just want to improve their lives.
I was a Boy Scout growing up. I became an Eagle Scout. That whole leave no trace bit, like kind of leaving that campsite the better than you found it, just like Smokey and that whole thing of like dousing that campfire out before you leave. Like all that, there are all these threads I could see of like who I was growing up that are bearing themselves out now. So. But I would not say I was always had this cape on that I need to like be the Superman hero guy. But it just, especially becoming a parent, that shifted things for me also. Just like, what am I doing here? Like, it's nice to amass wealth, but is that really all that you're doing with your days? So.
It's such a strong argument for having those core values, right? At the end of the day, at its core, like, what's your purpose? Like, why are you trying to do this? And so I think a lot of leaders and CEOs are like figuring that out and trying to answer that question, you know, on a daily basis. And so I think that's beautiful. You know, you talked about threads and all of the threads in your life kind of led to this. When you think about the CEOs, the leaders, the successful people you've been able to work with, just experience in your 54 years of life, what are the threads of those individuals to you?
So I think there's things around like some words that I've already used, just that curiosity about things around them. Like there is a dissatisfaction in a way. Like I'm not willing to accept that this is the way we have to do this. Like the way that we have to write something is typing on a typewriter that has all these manual keys on it or something like that. That just seems crazy to me. Or that to add, we have to use beads on a abacus or something. Like I think there has to be something where you're like, not actually curmudgeon, although I can lead towards that path, but just where you're just not, you know what, this isn't good enough. I know it can be better. And so with that, there's a bit of like curmudgeon, but there's also a hope. That person has that they think they can have a better solution.
I like that.
I think there's also that stick-to-itiveness that's there. I think, again, Swiss Army knife-ishness, because you can't It's hard to be a pure single siloed individual, especially at the early stages of running a business. You are wearing so many hats, like you're going to be picking garbage out of a trash. You're not going to have time to like pay a janitor or anything like that. So quite literally, you have to be able to be malleable along the way, but with a good strong basis, knowing what your core values are, knowing what your non-negotiables might be, your BATNA, however you might put that, like these are my lines of demarcation that I won't cross for myself, but still being able to parry with a lot of things that come your way.
I like that. What is BATNA?
Best alternative to a negotiated agreement. So basically, if we were going off of a salary negotiation, that if you try to nickel and dime me, my BATNA might be that I'm gonna walk. If he says he's not gonna give me 75K and I want 75K, I'm gonna walk that. Like because I could go start my own business and I could make more than that, even if there's pain here. It's whatever you're saying, you know what, like a non-negotiable or a point, like I'm just gonna, like I have other things I could do. Like I could, my best alternative would be start a business, or my best alternative would be go to another company where maybe I kind of deal with some other things that I don't necessarily want. But I think we do that all the time, going to things. Like there are things I can do. You may not articulate it to yourself, but I think you're having to confront that BATNA or that non-negotiable set as an entrepreneur a lot, really.
I like that BATNA. And I liked what you were saying earlier about like just, you know, individuals kind of having this dissatisfaction for that things can be better, you know, and just, I'm not going to settle for this. I'm going to continue to keep pushing and keep pushing to make it happen. So yeah, I really liked what you're saying. Of course, it's probably brilliant people you've met, learned from throughout your career. It's never, you know, the business is built by you, but of course it's on the backs of so many mentors and so many individuals that have, you know, entered your life. Michael, in all of this, let's bring this home. What is your definition of a real leader?
Somebody who shows up, somebody who's willing to put in the work, stay focused, get a little scared along the way, and ultimately carry as many people as possible forward towards where you're going in that direction, to improve their lives beyond just improving your own life. I feel like just really kind of seeing, how do I make this space better for others beyond just myself, really? Because I think that's all we're ever trying to do. We humans evolve, and in many ways we don't evolve. We still have some there are people out there that are reprobates, people that just have crappy opinions and still don't want to kind of change systems and structures. And those systems and structures are hard to change. But I think ultimately leaders look at those big hairy challenges and just say, F that. That's not the way it has to be. I can change that and I can make an impact. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to show others how they could do that. And I'm going to bring them along with me. And then maybe they're the one leading me to a different place, because I, like, you know what? I ran the baton for so far, and now I'm passing it off and let them lead the baton to a different, better place. I think you have to be willing to let go at a certain point too. So,
yeah, absolutely. I love that. Bold. Well, Michael, appreciate your time here on the Real Leaders Podcast today. For Michael Bellavia, I'm Kevin Edwards, asking you to go out there, improve lives, be bold, and always keep it real. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Hey, Real Leaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to realleaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free, where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.